Hi, kid. Hey, come in here right now. Come on, because it's time for...
Big John!
And... Sparky!
With another hour of stories and songs for the younger generation and the young at heart. Hi, this is Big John. And Sparky, the little elf from the land of make-believe who wants more than anything else in the world to be a real boy, is right here with me. Yes, sir. Once again, from San Francisco, California, within sight of the Golden Gate, it's time for the biggest party in the world because it goes all the way around the world. Time for Big John and Sparky and No School Today.
Today's the day we go with the King Kong story, huh, Big John?
That's right.
Yeah, it's going to be a great thing for you, boys and girls. Wait till you hear it. This is, what do you call this, Big John? A classic?
I'd call it a classic, yes.
Is this, by any chance, a true story?
No, but the way you'll hear it today, you'll think it's true, except it's pretty fantastic.
It's pretty crazy. They have an ape that climbs up on top of the Empire State Building and... grabs those jets right out of the air.
Well, now, don't go giving away the whole story. And besides, they weren't jets, Sparky. This story took place before they had jet airplanes. They just had the propeller-driven fighter planes. You wouldn't understand, I guess.
Well, anyway, it'll help pass the time. Well, I sure wish there was a way to make that old clock move faster so it'd be 2 o'clock this afternoon.
2 o'clock?
Sure.
2 o'clock. Oh, that's the time the Westwood Theater opens, huh?
That's right, you bet.
Yeah, and you're anxious to see the next thrilling and exciting chapter in the movie serial General Comet of the Universe Patrol, I take it.
Yeah, boy. Hey, did I tell you what happened in the chapter I saw last week?
No, you didn't. Let's see. What sort of a mess was Captain Jupiter in the last time he told me about the movie?
Well, don't you remember, Big John, Captain Jupiter was knocked back to the year 3000 after helping George Washington win the Revolutionary War by inventing an atomic bomb?
Oh, that's right.
Sure.
And after that atomic bomb exploded when George Washington crossed the Delaware River, Captain Jupiter woke up and found himself back in the year 3000, tied hand and foot and strapped to a great big rocket, huh?
That's right. And guess who it was that strapped Captain Jupiter to the great big rocket?
Well, it wasn't George Washington, I know that.
Are you sure?
Well, I'm pretty sure. I'm quite sure George Washington wouldn't do a thing like that.
Well, that's right. He didn't, so... Big John, Captain Jupiter had been strapped to that great big rocket by his most hated enemy, Montmorency Clutch Rider.
Oh, no, not Montmorency Clutch Rider again.
Yeah, that's right. And boy, I tell you, Captain Jupiter was really in a mess this time. Oh, he was sweating like Niagara Falls. And Montmorency Clutch Rider just stood there, twisting the ends of his big black mustache with his fingers.
A regular villain, huh?
Yeah. He sure was. Montmorency Clutch Rider laughed.
Well, Jupiter, he said, now I've got you right where I want you.
What was he going to do with Captain Jupiter?
Well, he told Captain Jupiter that he had the rocket he was strapped to aimed right at the sun. And he was going to send Captain Jupiter to the sun and fry him crisper than a thin slice of burnt bacon.
I can imagine. What happened?
Well, Montmorency lit the fuse on the great big rocket, and wow, off it went. Blue, purple, green, yellow, orange, and red flames shot out of the rocket exhaust pipes, and that rocket took off and shot up into the wild blue sky yonder and headed straight for the blazing sun.
Oh, my goodness.
You might well say that.
Poor Captain Jupiter.
Poor indeed.
I'll bet he was a goner this time, huh?
Oh, boy, I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it this time, because as that rocket with Captain Jupiter strapped on it shot into the air, Montmorency Clutch Rider just stood there on the ground laughing and screaming his head off like a madman.
A madman indeed. Well, he'd have to be a madman to do a thing like that. A dastardly deed.
Oh, you should have seen him. And hamming it up, he was yelling,
"At last, at last, at last, I've done away with you, Captain Jupiter."
Oh, boy. Such ham you kids go for. Okay, so then what happened?
Well, Captain Jupiter's rocket ship, or not the rocket ship, but the rocket he was strapped to, was whizzing through space almost 1,000,000 miles an hour, and he was headed straight for the sun.
You know, it's a terrible way for the story of Captain Jupiter to end.
And Big John, the closer to the sun the rocket got, the hotter it got. And then all of a sudden, guess what?
What?
The straps that held Captain Jupiter to the rocket caught fire.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Yes, and they broke. They broke, and Captain Jupiter was no longer strapped to the rocket.
He was free.
Well, no, Big John, no. He had to hang on to the rocket, because if he didn't, he'd fall off, and he'd end up floating through space forever and forever.
That's right.
Sure. So he had to hang on to the rocket and just stay with it until it crashed into the sun and fried him crisper than a thin slice of burnt bacon.
But he was still in a mess then.
Well, sure, anybody can see that.
I can.
But he took out his portable distance measurer, which he always keeps in his pocket, and he aimed it at the sun, and he looked through the portable distance measure and said, in his quite low voice, which he could hardly hear up there in the rarefied atmosphere, he said,
"According to my calculations, I am 46,501,500 miles from the sun."
Well, then he said,
"According to my calculations, it will take this here rocket about approximately pretty close to nearly exactly, I'd say about 5 hours to reach the sun. In other words, I have 5 hours in which to figure out a way of to get out of this here mess."
And then, Big John, just when he said that, well, chapter 214 ended.
I see. And so this afternoon when you see chapter 215, you'll find out how Captain Jupiter spent the 5 hours that he had figuring a way to get out of this mess. Or, of course, as it could happen, you will also find out if his rocket will crash into the moon, huh?
That is right. That is right. Well, while I'm waiting for 2 o'clock this afternoon to get here, and also while I'm waiting for the King Kong story to start, how about, let's have a little march here.
All right.
Okay?
Sure.
All right, Yo-Hooey, strike up the band.
Thank you very much, Gil Hooley. All right, boys and girls, now we come to our feature story of the day. And I think some of you older kids are going to really enjoy this because this is an adaptation from the original RKO General Motion Picture classic, King Kong. Yes, King Kong. It's adapted for a recording by Cherneyberg, and it's heard today on a golden record. I would call this a classic. You boys and girls who are very young, your grandparents saw this in the movies, and you older kids, your parents probably saw it. I know that I was only, well, I'm not going to tell you how old I was when I saw it in the movies, but it was quite a thrill, as much as it is for Sparky to see Captain Jupiter, for me to see the story of this great monster ape who was so tall that, well, he must have been 50, 60, or 70 feet tall. I don't know what his exact measurements were, but he was huge. I believe the story could best be told by this old sea captain over here. He's the skipper of that ship that you see off there in the fog, right off the coast. Skipper, must be a lot of stories connected with that ship, huh?
Yeah, that's the old ship sitting out there, the SS Sumatra. A good ship, but I never want to sail with her again. I was her captain for many years, mostly the South Pacific, Surabaya, the Philippines, Java, Ceylon, and up and down the west coast of India. Ah, we had adventures, this old steel lady and me. But the last one was the worst one. It was a long time ago, but I'll never forget it. I still wake up at night screaming, and I don't scare easily. The newspapers carried the story of Kong. King Kong was what Denham called the beast. Who was Denham? I'll tell you the story about Denham, Driscoll, Anne, and the monster, King Kong. I first met Denham, I think it was in 1932. Yeah, we were laid up here in New York Harbor. No cargo, no credit. A full crew to pay, and I had no money. It was winter, a heavy snow, Christmas coming. And if the devil came up that gangplank and asked me to sail him to hell, if he had the money, I would have given him the best cabin and sailed on the first tide. This was my cabin. I remember sitting here very worried when Driscoll, my first mate, knocked on the door. Come.
A man came aboard, Captain, says he must see you.
Mr. Driscoll, if he's a bill collector, tell him I've jumped ship.
He drove up to the dock in a chauffeur-driven car.
So? Well, don't stand there. Tell him I'll be delighted to see him.
That's what he said. Come in, sir. Captain Engelhorn, Mr. Denham.
Sit down, sir.
Thank you.
And what can I do for you?
Captain, I want to charter your boats. I'm Denham of Denham Motion Pictures Incorporated. My company makes travel films. I want you to take me, my cameraman, an actor or two, to the Southwest Pacific. I've been told you're familiar with the area.
More than familiar. The Pacific is where I got my sea legs and learned my trade. Where exactly is your destination?
That's something I can't tell you until we get there.
Well, a ship must have a destination, a point on the chart to sail to, Mr. Denham.
I have the exact longitude and latitude. I'll give them to you after we reach the East Indies. Now, for the services of your ship, crew, yourself, I'm prepared to pay a more than generous sum.
A more than generous sum? Well, times were bad, and a sailor might just as well be a farmer if he's not at sea. I agreed to Mr. Denham's deal. But if I could have seen ahead, I would have thrown Mr. Denham overboard.
Secure that number three hatch.
Aye, sir.
Blow away. Easy now.
Mr. Driscoll.
Sir.
I want to hoist anchors and sail on the ebb tide.
Anxious to get underway?
I get sick living on shore too long.
Well, engine room reports steam is up to full.
Well, I'd be glad to get away from this cold.
Oh, heading south then, hmm?
South and east. And that's all I know. Well, Mr. Denham is punctual. Send two men down to help him with his gear, Mr. Driscoll.
Aye, sir. There's a woman with him.
I recognize the outlines, Mr. Driscoll.
Two men to the dock!
And make ready to cast off, Mr. Driscoll.
Aye, sir.
Denham and his movie people came aboard and were shown to the cabins below decks. Anne Darrow, a beautiful young lady, was an out-of-work actress who asked no questions. She had a job, and the idea of spending time in the tropics appealed to her. Stand by to cast off all lines. Single up, Mr. Driscoll.
Single up, fore and aft.
Cast off, Mr. Driscoll.
Let's go, fore and aft.
Helmsman, all astern, slow. Let the tide take her.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hard aport.
Hard aport, you, sir.
Now, midships.
Midships, you, sir.
All ahead, slow.
All ahead, slow, sir.
Take over the helm, Mr. Driscoll. I'll give you the new course when we clear the Ambrose Light.
Aye, sir. I relieve you now, sir.
I'll be below to check with our passengers.
Aye, sir.
I tried very hard to be friendly with Mr. Denham, but that was very difficult. So we arrived at a working agreement. He was in charge of his crew, I was in charge of the ship. But nothing I could say would get Denham to give me the slightest hint of our destination. I even had Driscoll speak with the girl. He was, at that time, a handsome young man, and I knew he upheld the traditions of the sea by having a girl in every port.
No, I'm not much of an actress, just a beginner, and this is quite a chance for me.
What are you supposed to do? Has Denham shown you a script?
No, he said we play the scenes as they happen. It's a travelogue, so I suppose I'll be sitting around watching natives dance, or fish, or hunt, or something like that.
Well, that doesn't seem like too much.
I'm the only actor in the company, so it'll be plenty for me.
I see.
Well, Mr. Driscoll, what do you think of our star?
As pretty as I've ever seen, Mr. Denham.
I thought sailors only talk that way in books.
Oh, there's a bit of truth in everything, Miss Darrow.
I might be able to use that line, Mr. Driscoll. And I want to run some film tests. The camera's set up front.
Forward, Mr. Denham.
Yeah, forward. Up ahead in the nose of the boat.
The prow is what it's called.
Oh, you know what I mean. And put on some makeup, eyeshadow, lipstick. We'll take a look.
He's not much of a sailor.
He'll learn, or Captain Engelhorn will toss him to the sharks. Now, you better go along, up to the nose in the boat.
Denham had set up cameras up forward on the foredeck. He had the girl leaning on a bollard. The weather was getting warmer as we headed south. A good ship, a calm sea, and people going about their work.
Okay, Anne.
Yes?
Look around. Roll the cameras. Action. Anne, look to your right. Now look left. Now look at me. That's right. Now you see something.
Oh.
You don't know what it is. Slowly now. You're amazed by it. Hold that. Now you become frightened. It's nothing you've ever seen before. It's coming closer. 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 You're too frightened to run. You're helpless. You can't scream. You're trying to hide it from your eyes. Good. Now scream. Scream! Scream for your life!
It was only a simple scream test, just to see how well Anne can follow direction.
But, Mr. Denham, it would seem to me you had some purpose.
The poor kid was terrified. She's in her cabin now. Won't let anyone come near her.
Oh, that just means she's a good actress.
There's something you're not telling us, Denham.
That's perfectly correct, mister. And I don't intend to tell you until I'm ready.
You'll tell us now, Denham.
Now, look, mister. I chartered this ship. You go where I tell you to go, and when I tell my actress to scream, she screams. And it's none of your business, sailor. Hell.
Mr. Driscoll! Belay that! Mr. Driscoll! Stop that! Mr. Driscoll, you will go on deck and cool your temper. Mr. Denham, you will go below to your cabin.
Oh, don't give me any orders. I don't go downstairs for anybody.
The expression is below, Mr. Denham. I am master of life and death aboard this vessel. And you will go below, or I will have you locked in the brig. A brig means a prison, Mr. Denham. Mr. Driscoll.
Aye, sir.
You better behave as a first mate should. If you expect to command your own ship, you cannot make clear decisions when your mind is muddled with personal feelings. The safety of the ship and her crew is your first concern. You can break Denham's neck when we're safe in port. Is that clear?
Aye, aye, sir. Very clear.
Somewhere off Hatteras, we ran into bad weather. The waves were running high and the sea broke over the bridge. As sometimes happens in a storm, we shook loose some of the cargo. I sent Driscoll below to make everything secure. He was a good sailor, so I left it all in his hands. But below decks in number 2 hold... This is the captain.
Will you come below, sir?
Problems, Mr. Driscoll?
Yes, sir. You better come and take a look.
In the older type ships, you had to cross the deck to get to the cargo hatches. Safety lines were rigged and I held on for dear life. As I crossed the deck to number 2 hold, I was annoyed with Driscoll, but I knew he would never call me unless he had a good reason.
These crates tore loose, Captain. This one broke open.
Gott in Himmel! Denham has enough here to start a war.
Dynamite, hand grenades, there's a case of high-powered rifles, ammunition, gas grenades.
Why would he need these to make movies?
Yes, sir, that's what I was wondering.
Just nail up the crates and say nothing.
Aye, sir.
Denham said all he was carrying was motion picture equipment and supplies for 6 months. As far as I'm concerned, that's all he is carrying.
Aye, sir.
We know of nothing else. None of these guns and dynamite will be unloaded from the ship. Keep the hatch closed and locked, Mr. Driscoll. And give me the keys. We made good time on our way through the Panama Canal into the Pacific, through every type of weather. Now the skies were clear and blue as the days grew from warm to hot. On a course of south by west, past Pitcairn Island, Rapa, then along the Tropic of Capricorn, almost to the Fijis. Then at 20 degrees south latitude and 160 degrees longitude west from Greenwich, with New Caledonia dead ahead. Come. Ah, Mr. Denham.
Captain, I believe we've been making excellent time.
So it depends on where we're heading.
You know Lord Howe Island?
Dead south of us, Mr. Denham.
Then change course southeast of Howe Island to 40 degrees south and 140 degrees 20 minutes east latitude. That's our destination.
My charts show no islands there?
That's the fault of the charts, Captain. I assure you that there is an island there, and that is our destination.
And for what reason, Mr. Denham?
The weirdest, wildest, most impossible thing you've ever seen. I'm going to make a movie the likes of which has never been made before. Have you ever heard of the word Kong?
There are many things I haven't heard.
And I, Captain. I first heard about Kong some 5 years ago. The man who told me was mad, raving. I would have dismissed the whole story if I hadn't seen a few feet of film he brought back. What I saw was enough to start me on my way. And frankly, Captain, now that we're almost there, I'm a little scared.
You aren't the first man to be scared by a rumor.
Now, you forget the film.
I include the film. You know, lights and shadows make strange images. That is all your Kong is, believe me.
Part of me would like to believe you, but the other half knows better.
Then what is Kong, if not imagination?
Not imagination, Captain. Kong is some strange kind of giant beast.
Helmsman, all ahead slow.
Shoaling up fast, Captain, so run aground.
Helmsman, all stop. Let go the anchors, Mr. Driscoll.
Let go, boat!
Captain Engelhorn. Captain Engelhorn, do you hear the drums?
Nothing unusual about drums in this part of the world. Call away, number one boat, Mr. Driscoll.
Stand by, number one boat!
We headed for shore, and the closer we came to the island, the more I was sorry we left our guns aboard the Sumatra. The beach was lined with native warriors, armed with spears and shields. I would not call it a hospitable welcome. Behind the beach, the forest began, and rising above the trees, a most incredible sight. A wall perhaps 40 feet high, made all of stone and running the length of the island as far as I could see. I looked at Denham and remembered the story he had told of Kong. For the first time, I began to believe that he was telling the truth. Anything seemed possible now.
Mr. Driscoll, look. That native girl.
Captain, there in the center. There's a girl tied hand and foot.
Stand to, Mr. Driscoll. Don't try to be a hero. These people have their own customs. Listen now, all of you. If you're frightened, don't show it. This is good acting practice for all of us, Mr. Denham.
You go. This land taboo. Stranger not belong. Many death here.
Chief, we come from far away. Ship sails very long time. We hear of Kong.
Kong, not for you. Kong, mighty killer. We give girl. She goes stay alone with Kong. 1 year time.
The girl's a sacrifice.
Your woman with gold hair. You give to great Kong. I give you many things.
Driscoll, get Anne out of here back to the boat. Move. Great chief. Woman with golden hair, not for Kong. She belongs to us. Denham, start back slowly. No panic. Mighty chief, very powerful. Me, chief, I'm more powerful. Girl with golden hair belong me. Denham, move back. He's thinking it over. When he makes up his mind, we'd better be off this island.
Aye!
It was a close call. We had raced the boat beyond the breakers when the natives reached the beach. Safe on board the ship, I tried to get Denham to leave the island, but his desire for making movies got the better of his judgment. I agreed to stay when he promised he'd leave Anne aboard ship. The drums sounded throughout the night. We could see the flickering campfires on the beach. I thought of that poor native girl tied up as a sacrifice for Kong. We slept fitfully that night. Then, sometime during the middle watch, Driscoll informed me that Anne was missing. We searched the ship, but she had gone. Anne had been taken by a war party of natives who had climbed aboard and captured her. Anne was to be a sacrifice to Kong. From the sounds coming from the island, there was little time for action. Mr. Driscoll!
Aye, sir.
Get 5 men, open up number 2 hold. Mr. Denham, I will overlook your bringing arms aboard this ship without permission. You will come along with a party. On the double, Mr. Driscoll. See that rifles, ammunition, hand grenades, gas grenades are issued to all the men.
Captain,
boat to come. Say him, leave village in peace. We make song. Tell children story of woman with gold hair. Aye! You wait. All quiet. Come, come, take you.
I've never seen anything that huge, Mr. Denham. We should have brought cannon. Rifles would be of little use against a monster that size.
We must get Anne. We can't leave her.
No one is leaving the girl. But can we fight that beast?
You can stay here and discuss what you're going to do. I'm going after Con.
Con, like that heavy tank, broke through the rainforest. Trees had fallen before him. And he left footprints 12 feet long. From time to time, we could see Kong's great head over the treetops. This was a nightmare world we had come to. We were now in what seemed to be a slice of prehistoric times, which somehow found a way to survive until now. All around us were gigantic ferns, strange trees and animals, great lizards that should have been long since dead. Had it not been for the thought of the girl, I would have turned back many times. I am brave enough in the world, I know, but here... The trail of Khan led us through what looked like a prehistoric wing of a museum come to life. Denham, in spite of the dangers, took time to identify the beasts as we saw them. Stagosaurus, Triceratops, Megatherium, Megaceratops, Hyanodon... Flying things, crawling things. It would have interested me more if they didn't look at us like we were a good meal on the move.
He's up ahead, Captain.
What about Anne?
Alive so far.
How far ahead?
Kong is across a deep ravine, about 1,000 feet drop to the bottom. Maybe 100 feet across. There might be a way to go around it.
If the girl is alive, we cannot take the chance of going around. I had the men cut down a large tree and drop it across the chasm to use it as a bridge. On the other side, I could see Kong. I was certain we were near his lair. First, I sent four of my men across. The beast saw them. He gently placed Anne down on the ground, and then he started for the log. Those four men held down for dear life. As that giant monster shook and rolled the log. Finally, Kong lifted the 100-foot tree and slammed it back on the ground. The log was cracked, but in place across the chasm. The four men were dead. And Kong guarded the far edge of the chasm. We had no choice but to go back. Anne was lost.
Look! Over there! What kind of beast is that?
It's going for Anne!
Try to scare it off!
Come, sees it! What is that thing?
Can't tell exactly. It's something like Tyrannosaurus. Paleosynchus. A man-eater!
While we modern men, armed with modern weapons, stood powerless to do anything. While the two giants fought, Driscoll picked up Anne, who had fainted from shock, and raced across the cracked tree which lay across the chasm. Kong had defeated a 30-foot lizard that stood 18 feet tall. Kong would catch us. There was no escape, no place of safety, except... Maybe one. That was down the side of the chasm to the rushing river. We started down. Kong stood above us, glaring down at us. The huge but trying not to kill us. I couldn't understand why he let us live. And then I realized that monstrosity, that relic from a million years ago, had a heart. It didn't want to hurt the girl. Kong seemed almost human then. I almost knew what he would do next. He would meet us downstream, someplace where he could get Anne without harming her, and kill the rest of us. We dived deep in the middle of the river while Kong followed us along the banks, roaring and beating his chest. And then we saw the rock cavern that led the river underneath the huge wall out to safety. Kong left us little choice. We tried smiling at each other, then took deep breaths and let the current carry us through to the other side of the wall and safety.
Anne, are you all right?
Oh, that thing, that horrible thing. I thought I was losing my mind.
No.
I'll never be able to forget it, never. Never as long as I live.
Anne, don't think about it. That's the end of Kong.
Captain, we'd make a fortune if we could bring Kong alive to the States.
I'd rather be a live sea captain, Mr. Denham.
Just think about it. Denham Enterprises presents King Kong.
Bravo. I don't think that big ape would sign a contract, Denham. Go ahead, ask him.
Run for the shore!
Go on, run. I'm going to try and get him.
He'll rip you to bits, Denham. Come on.
Let go. A couple of gas grenades ought to stop him dead. One over, one under, one in front.
It's just humming.
Three of those would have put a regiment to sleep. It's impossible.
Complain to the company who made them. Get to the boat. Come on, Denham.
Wait! The gas grenades! They're working!
Mr. Denham, I think you're a very brave but foolish man. He's all yours.
Yeah. He's all... Uh-huh.
And Denham, he's all mine. I'll take him to the boat.
Poor Kong. He looks so harmless now.
It took most of a day to get Kong out to the ship and placed in the hold. I had anchor chain welded over the hatch. We had a pretty good prison for the giant ape. Kong was beaten and he knew it. He did nothing except now and then trying to knock out the sides of the ship. Only Anne could calm him down. She would stand by the hatchway and speak to the beast.
Poor thing. Poor Kong. No one will hurt you. Anne is here.
Couldn't hurt him if we tried.
It's a little sad to see anything in captivity.
No, he's done enough damage in his day, Anne.
He was only protecting himself.
And we were only trying to protect you.
Were you?
Let's get away from your friend before you have to do that all over again.
There is an old sailor's wish, calm sea and prosperous voyage, which we had going back. Mr. Driscoll and Anne asked me to be best man, but I was captain and couldn't marry them if I accepted that honor. Mr. Denham was best man. Anne and Driscoll became man and wife. When we sailed into New York Harbor, we were a happy ship carrying the strangest cargo ever to come into that port. Denham had a theater rented in the middle of New York City, in Times Square. There were plenty who'd pay to see this prehistoric killer, and just as many who thought Kong was a fake, but would pay just to ooh and ah. Kong was no longer the beast from that prehistoric jungle. He was frightened and beaten, and he went wherever Denham took him. Kong seemed like some monstrous organ grinder's monkey. It was the first night that Kong was to be shown. The theater was plastered with signs. King Kong, the name Denham had given the great ape. Denham asked me to be in the audience, to introduce me as the captain who shared all the dangers. Driscoll and Anne were also there. Denham said love interest was very important. In spite of himself, he was a brave man, and that we had to respect. The curtain went up.
Ladies and gentlemen, a beast out of history, out of place, out of time, a sight once seen by cavemen, but never before viewed by modern man. Ladies and gentlemen, King Kong!
Kong, frightened by the sounds of a strange world, began pulling at his huge chains. He looked out into the audience, and he saw Anne. We rushed her out of the theater. As the crowds panicked, Kong trampled them as he went after Anne. Kong loose in the city, police and fire departments useless as Kong began his search for the girl. The city came to a stop. No place was safe. There was no place to hide as Kong raged up and down the streets, crushing everything in his way. Driscoll and I hurried Anne back to the ship with the idea of getting underway and out to sea, but we never would have made it. Kong, with that logic peculiar to the great apes, made his way to the river and to the ship. He saw us. He saw Anne. And then the great monster reached out. He took Anne.
Army Air Force, Roosevelt Field, Office of the Day speaking. Yes, sir, there's a fighter squadron. Well, I suggest you call the zoo. We don't handle monkeys here. What? You're kidding. Right away.
All pilots, man your planes. Condition red. Repeat, condition red. This is not an exercise. Repeat, this is not an exercise.
Kong destroyed all in his way. All we could do was to follow. It was impossible to shoot at him for fear of hitting Anne. Kong, in a panic, looking for safety, found the only place he thought he would be safe. Slowly, carrying Anne gently in one paw, he began to climb the Empire State Building, 102 stories into the air, over 1,000 feet from the ground. The crowds below were silent with fear. The only sound was Anne. Suddenly, from a long way away, a sound of hope for the city, and maybe the end for Anne. The fighter planes were coming in, biplanes, each with 2 machine guns and a few bombs. Driscoll heard them and started into the building, pushing through the line of police. Dawn was just breaking, and there they were, 9 fighter planes flying straight towards Kong. He held the girl high up in the air. The planes zoomed away.
Red leader, that thing's holding a girl in his paw. Jack, come around for another pass. Don't fire until I signal. Red leader to all elements. Forget the girl, shoot the kid. Can't do that. 8 million people in that city down there. Only one girl up here. Follow me in. Be love. He's putting her down.
My God, what kind of a thing is that? You name it. I'll feed it. Here I go.
I could only see Kong put the girl down and hope that Driscoll had pulled her to safety. The fighters, with one plane missing now, continued making their runs on Kong. And he stood there, pawing at them, trying to swipe them out of the air. Modern bees against a giant. How much could Kong take? How many bullets? I don't know how long it took. All I could see was Kong weaving back and forth, always trying to fight off the planes. A monster fighting for its life. And then Kong began to topple, to stagger. The police pushed the crowds back, back. And the planes made one more run. And that is all. The story of Kong. King Kong. A yesterday that lived today. A story to frighten children. Unbelievable, impossible, incredible. Whatever you choose to call it. But I know it to be the truth. And now you know it. Believe what you want. You can't change the truth.
And so our scratchy old record of a scratchy old story. A classic from a bygone day. King Kong comes to an end. This was just for old time's sake. For some of the old time kids that are with us on this day's program. King Kong. I don't remember who played the part of the ape in that. Well, that was one of the great ones, wasn't it? And you heard it today on a golden record. The story was adapted from the original RKO General Motion Picture Classic, adapted for recording by Cherney Berg. In the weeks to follow, we have some other classics like Journey to the Middle of the Earth, First Man on the Moon. We've got a couple pretty good monster stories coming up. We even have the story of Superman and Batman and all kinds of goodies. And Sparky, I notice that we have just a few short minutes left in today's program, and you've been going here lately with the mashed potato and the holly gully and the frug and the rock a cha cha and the chicken back, and I think today I'd like to hear a little bow diddly. Have you got some of that kind of stuff?
Okay, Big John, if you really want it, we'll really give it to you. What do you say, gang? Let's give Big John a little bit of that Muffet Tuffet business here. This is Little Miss Muffet. Let's go.
Little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet. A tuffet is a tough thing on which to relax. If I had a tuffet, I'd take it and stuff it, and bake it and tie it to the railroad tracks. Yeah, 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 I'd bake it and tie it to the railroad tracks.
I'd bake it and tie it to the railroad tracks.
Well, I still can't do it. I listen to it and I like it, but when it comes down to making those movements, I think I've just got to sit over on the sidelines with the rest of the graybeards and leave that strenuous exercise up to you kids. There's a Bo Diddley arrangement of Little Miss Muffet and tying that tuffet to the railroad track. Well, I see it's about time for us to take off. I want to invite you to be with us again next week when you hear this familiar theme song. Yes, for the 757,000th time, it seems like, the Teddy Bear's Picnic swings out across the air lanes and reminds us that we're either coming or going. And since we've been here for an hour, I presume that it's time for us to go. So this is Big John.
And this is Sparky saying so long until next time.
Yes, from both of us to all of you, the best of everything that's good. May all your good dreams come true. Bye-bye.